Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Hey friends, welcome back. Man, this is a hell of an episode. Sean Wachter is, he ticks like 40 boxes. And what I'm about to tell you is like, I've never had a guy like this on the show before. Only because of these boxes. I mean, he's got a crazy story too, of course. Who doesn't? He's an actor. He's a coffee guy. He's owned coffee shops. He's a nonprofit consultant. He's a wrestling promoter. He's a wrestler. He knows the WWE, the WWF. He's a football coach, and he's a survivor of like the rarest melanoma that went into his brain. And I mean rare, like he's the only living survivor of this crazy thing that rarely happens. And he's here today, alive, in 3D, in person, here in the studio, around to talk about this crazy unconventional history of his. What it's like to be a two-sport collegiate professional athlete that goes through hell and back. And just him telling his story is so resonant with me. And what I went through was 28 years ago, and it's the same freaking thing. I can't do this intro justice to who Sean Wachter is, but he's here. He's amazing. Enjoy the show. Dr. Wachter, you're not a doctor. Welcome to Out of Patience.
Thank you, Matthew. Thanks for having me.
All right, first question. Do you hate people named Sean that spells it not S-E-A-N? Is there a real battle of the Seans with regard to the way it's spelled?
I'm almost envious because it's so much easier to pronounce. Phonetically, it spells itself out.
Have you been called Seen?
Of course.
Really?
Of course.
By who?
Oh, goodness.
Starbucks?
Starbucks, teachers, lunch ladies. My entire 38 years on this floating rock, it's been filled with Seen, and don't even, my last name, oof, that's even worse.
Wachter.
Yeah, Wachter. Yeah. I get a lot of Wachter, Wachner, Wachler.
Wachter?
Yeah. It was so bad, actually, when my wife and I got married. I said, you know what? Let's do you a favor. Let's keep
your. Did she not take your name?
I told her not to.
My wife did the same thing. So my listeners know, maybe some of them know, Matthew Zachary is my Hebrew name,
okay.
Meyer Ziska.
Okay.
So my last name, my given name, is Greenzweig, Matthew Zachary Greenzweig. But I've been using Matthew Zachary because, A, Greenzweig. Spell that one. But you, the absolute tumult in people trying to pronounce that last name all the time, my wife's maiden name was Feldman. I'm like, please keep Feldman. So she's not Jessica Feldman Greenzweig, because that's the worst credit card limit of type on there. It's just Jessica Feldman. So we both did the right thing in the spirit of our spouses.
I figured I owed her one, being she was kind enough to marry me.
Yes.
Let me make her life a little easier so people aren't going, oh, Mrs. Wachler, Wachter, Wach. Nope. Good. My daughter, though, she's stuck with it.
Yeah. Like, my kids are Greenzweig.
Okay.
So I'm Matthew Zachary. She's Jessica Feldman. My kids are Kobe and Hannah Greenzweig. They're screwed for life.
Fair enough.
That's the I don't know, semantic identity crisis that they'll be facing in their life. Who are your parents? Coming to pick you up at school? I'm sorry. Who are you? How long have you been married?
Oh, well, we've been together now for about 7 years, and we just tied the knot last Christmas.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Mazel tov.
Thank you. Thank
you. Mazel tov and all your Irish Germanness.
Well, mazel tov is appropriate, as my wife is a daughter of Sarah.
Oh.
Yes. However, amusingly, I'm the one that makes sure Hanukkah is celebrated in our home.
So she made you Jewish.
Yes.
Brilliant.
Yes.
Which
yes.
means your kids are being raised Jewish?
Or
Jewish?
We are raising them agnostic.
Okay.
And my whole viewpoint is when they're old enough to read and learn on their own, whatever they choose, so be it.
I mean, when Jews say Jewish, like Jews like me, we don't mean like go to synagogue every Friday and separate your meat from your milk and have two drawers. Like it's just like, you know, it's eight presents.
Well,
eight crazy nights.
Well, that's the whole thing. I totally enjoy the heritage.
Yes.
I enjoy the traditions. It's funny watching the Catholic schoolboy cook, you know, traditional Hanukkah dinner.
Yeah.
You know, with the matzo balls and the, you know, brisket and the.
Can you say challah?
Challah.
You kind of have the ch.
I do.
Emerging.
Yeah.
Well, give it like 3 or 4 more years of marriage.
Being on Long Island, you get a little bit of a leg up on that, you know?
Oh, you were Jewish before you got married, dude.
Of course.
Well, you're here because of, you know, cancer fucked you up. But your story, like, it's hard to say, like, I've never really had someone that ticked off all these boxes at the same goddamn time. But I'll just read this off because, you know, there's an intro. Listeners will know what the show's about, but actor.
Yep.
That, I mean, we're not going to tier them. I'm just going to read them.
Just going to go off the list. Okay.
Coffee guy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Barista, coffee shop owner, wholesale retail sales.
I will say not barista out of respect for those who actually do that for a living.
Well, that's good art. Okay.
That is art.
You're not making like latte flowers.
No. Okay. I knew how to make the drink, right, but not well.
Okay. So knowing your limits.
Exactly.
Okay. Nonprofit consultant. I have a lot of nonprofit therapy stuff to talk to you about in the second half of the show. Wrestling. Dude,
yeah.
Come on. Like, holy shit. Wrestling? Like WWF before WWE wrestling?
Yeah.
Old school Vince McMahon.
I took a swing at it a few times. And once I got cleared from the cancer, you know, we wound up throwing a fundraiser and a couple buddies twisted my arm and back in the ring I went, and then the following year back in I went, and all of a sudden, very prominent organization called me up and said, well, we know you exist now. Do you still wrestle? And I said, of course. And I partnered up with a local promotion, and they're knocking the rust off me right now.
That's extraordinary. Again, like a box that has not been ticked on this show before. I mean, I've had a guy on the show who was like Riddick Bowe's trainer. Like that's a rare box to tick, like get these people on the show. And football guy.
Yes.
Like hardened sports guy.
Yeah, I played lacrosse and football in college. And
you coach.
I coached football for 9 years, and I also played a season in the now defunct Arena League. My season that I played was 2008, and I played with the New Jersey Revolution and the New York Dragons. And after the season was done, due to the economic crisis, the league folded.
What economic crisis?
Well,
country do you live in?
Exactly. There's so many now.
Yes.
But the 2008 one. And as my friends like to say, you were so bad, they actually folded the league.
Well, it could have been the XFL. Could have been much worse.
That would have been cool, though.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
true.
He hate me and all that good stuff.
Yeah, that's good stuff, though. And rare cancer dude. Rare cancer dude. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
well, so let's define rare, because it's good to remember what that word means. It's tossed around all the time in the rare disease world. Rare, according to the NIH and the NCI with cancer, less than 200,000 cases a year constitutes rare. Mm-hmm. Every cancer under 40, regardless of the type of cancer, is itself rare. Of course, there's 70 some odd thousand a year, way below that threshold, and you were part of that rare club.
Yes, at 31 years old, I was diagnosed.
Last week, right?
Yep, pretty much. Yeah. I wish.
You haven't aged a bit.
I wish. No, not at all. My hair is still intact and my beard still looks as red as a fire.
I mean, for radio's sake, like, we go to the same barber, so we'll just give the listeners sense.
I would say I look more of like a Fabio type, definitely. Yep.
On the book covers?
Yes, on the book covers, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Well done.
That's a good thing that you don't have a simulcast for this thing, because my credibility would go out the window.
So were you – like, where were you in this, like, crazy wrestling, football, coffee shop-owning guy when this happened? Like, at what stage of your insane box-ticking life were you?
All right. So I would say at that point in my life, well, I had tried my hand at wrestling again, and I was about 27 years old at that point. I had just finished up my first stint of coaching football and working in a public high school. And unfortunately, again, the ripples of the 2008 economic collapse came about. So wound up leaving teaching. Not my choice. Leaving coaching again. Not my choice. Just needed to pay the bills. I had my own nightclub security and executive protection company at the time that did.
That's a box I didn't even say.
Yeah, that's on there. A lot of people see me now and go, no way. But I was a 300-pound offensive lineman in college. So
there you go.
Yeah, a little bit of wiggle room to kind of keep people safe. But I figured, while I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do with myself, let me give the wrestling another crack again. And it was going well. I was training with another local promotion. And one of the big boys actually offered me a tryout, had the tryout with them. And they said, hey, oddly enough, learn how to speak German, and then we'll bring you down to Florida for a proper go-around. I said, oh, great. And somebody who's always loved wrestling, and it's always been my rock, and whatever storm has been going on in my life, I was at the top of the world, and unfortunately, I had an injury, and I broke my neck and back. And
Wait, wrestling's not fake?
we like to use the word predetermined.
That's a good way to put it.
The F word is a very, very no-no word.
I know.
Yeah. It's predetermined.
I watched the Andre the Giant documentary recently, and yeah, it was real enough to really hurt him.
Where he gets up and goes, oh, get out of here!
Yeah.
The guy's sneaking back. That's the best part.
Yeah.
But I broke my neck and back, and I had, must have been 9 surgeries and about 16 fusions. So at that point in my life, I was 31, hadn't really done much of anything than gone around and collect the checks from the different accounts that we had for the security company. And I guess the best summation of my life was meathead frat boy at that part.
Before hashtags. That was your hashtag.
Hashtag meathead frat boy at living by himself in a bar town. You know, that's wow. Basically it, you know, and I watched all my friends and buddies, you know, have families, have kids. And at the time I was like, you know what? Nah, I don't really want that. I'm good with that. I enjoy, you know, being by myself, getting to do my own thing. And, like I said, I was living a life, but I wasn't living a fulfilling life. Right. So
did all these injuries lead to them finding something that was there that you didn't know about, or you had like random symptoms one day?
Absolutely not. That actually made things a heck of a lot worse, because when I went to go to these various doctors over a period of, I'd probably say 7 months, I went to them and said, hey, you know, I'm having these headaches, I'm having balance issues, I'm feeling nauseous, I'm feeling dizzy, you know, I'm losing feeling to my hands. And they said, unfortunately, that's all lingering effects from your injury. And
the easy answer.
Yeah, exactly. The easy answer. And I just kept advocating for myself, saying, no, there's more here. I need you to please look deeper. And I got to the point where I kept, figuratively banging on the door of my local hospital so often that they actually wanted to put me on a psych hold because they thought I was having some sort of disorder where I was making up something. Well,
yeah, hypochondria is, of course.
Joke's on them, because 2 months later, I showed up at their emergency room with a massive stroke going on caused by a golf ball-sized brain tumor in my cerebellum.
Nothing I know about. Like I said, nothing I know anything about.
No,
a golf ball-sized tumor in your cerebellum.
No.
Oh, wait, I had that.
Yeah, exactly, you know. So
tumor buddies right here.
But again, while all this is going on at that hospital, they're going, we're just going to treat you like you have a head cold. You're too young to have a scan. I had to use some coarse language in order to get that scan. And within 30 seconds, they knew exactly what was going on. And, you know, it was kind of like, all right, well, now I'm right. But, now that I'm right, what's my prize? And, you have cancer.
Yeah, I'm endlessly nodding my head here because this is exactly my story, 100%. And this was in the 90s, of course. So, like, it sucks you have to have real symptoms for them to take you seriously. But at the same time, is it fair for them to just say, you have a brain tumor when you're 31 years old, which is extremely rare? And just to go on the cold medicine thing, I was given Robitussin at some point during that semester because they thought I was just like had flu-like symptoms. And like Robitussin for brain cancer, I vowed that would never happen again, and that happened to you.
Well, it's, after obviously this happened, I reevaluated some of my clinicians. And the big joke with my father and my wife is that Z-Pak cures cancer because...
Windex cures cancer.
Well, you know...
You're not Greek, though, so...
Yeah, you know, it's... Who knows what I am? I'm a mutt. But my primary care doctor, one of the last times I saw him before I got sick, said, here, have a Z-Pak. And apparently that's all you need when you're having a brain bleed and losing your ability to walk.
Mm-hmm.
Just a Z-Pak, that's all.
So what was this fabulous thing inside your head?
This fabulous thing was a manifestation of stage 4 melanoma, and it was a rare type where they were never able to find the primary on my skin. But since I used to have blonde hair and blue eyes, apparently it's easier for folks myself to contract this rare type of melanoma.
And on the inside.
On the inside. And then, to make it extra juicy, this is the fun complication that gave me 12 weeks to live. It spread to my brain and spinal cord fluid called leptomeningeal disease.
It's a lot of syllables.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, the life expectancy, the maximum life expectancy once being diagnosed is 12 weeks. Apparently, I am the only documented case they have of someone that's survived this. And through two DNA tests, I am certified clean 7 years later. So...
Is that a good misdiagnosis? You'll be dead in 6 months. Oh, thanks for being wrong.
You know...
Well, your case, 3 months, 12 weeks.
Well, yeah, three months. Everything was there, though. It wasn't like, you know, they were just guessing. They tested the spinal cord fluid. I was having the seizures. You know, everything was showing up. And even after a year or two into treatment, which was a year or two that I didn't think I was going to get, it was still showing up. It finally didn't clear itself out of their samples until about, probably about 2 years ago. And then the summer of 2022 was when they finally gave me that DNA test. And they said, you're clear. And actually, you're the only one who's ever done this before.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's not just rare. That's fucking rare.
Yeah. And like we were talking about earlier, you know, I get this news and everyone all of a sudden is like, oh, you need to have a party. And I said to myself, I got awful survivor's guilt, you know.
That's a real thing.
It is, especially, you know, when one of the most early, like the earliest impacts that happened on my cancer journey was getting radiation after having the tumor removed, you know, through craniotomy with the...
Where's your scar?
It's on the back of my head.
You probably have the same one I have, like a little zipper in your neck.
Well, see, the fun thing with me is since I had all those fun neck and back surgeries, I have one continuous scar going from the middle of my head all the way down to the crack of my hiney.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Now, that's a zipper.
No, that's a zipper and a half. So...
I like you said hiney.
Yeah.
Have you heard the show?
I have and I haven't. I just know that
it's a very 70s, 80s Gen X way to say it. I like it.
I got to say it because I know my boss may give a listen.
Okay.
My wife is going to listen.
I'll take it for the team and just say fuck every single other sentence.
You'll have to use my, because that's my normal go-to.
Okay. I get it.
Thank you.
Reputation, all sorts of good stuff.
Thank you. Yes. So when I got that DNA test, it's just...
Oh, it's gone.
No, it's gone. It's gone. And my buddies say, hey, have this party. And like I said, I had this terrible survivor's guilt because...
You're the only one.
I know. Well, also, too, when I first started getting treated and they were clean...
Wait, watch the table.
Oh, sorry, again.
You gesticulate pretty well.
I'm just...
Like,
I'm gesticulating. I'm flaring. You know, when my wife hears this, she'll probably be like, I know exactly how you were doing and what gesture you were doing at that time.
Right.
Yeah. Too much talking with my hands, you know. That's why I told you we have to reevaluate that whole being Irish position.
No, it's good. It's dynamic. Like your actor... genes are showing through. But let's get to that after the break because I'm just enthralled. And we're going to spend a lot of time, listeners, about 80s wrestlers. So we'll be right back after the break from, I don't know, Hulkamania 84.
Fantastic.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, acting.
Okay.
Is it fair to say wrestling and acting are in the same Venn diagram?
I would say they're in the same Venn diagram, but I would say that they exist in a bigger universe. I would basically call it art, much like music can be art, acting could be an art, wrestling could be an art, painting could be an art. It's all just different mediums of expression and art. And even with music, I've always said if it's written well and performed properly, I don't care what the genre is. I will listen to it. I will enjoy it and take it for what it is. So at the end of the day, I don't care if you use Play-Doh, a paintbrush, a piano, or maybe you're giving someone a stone cold stunner. But at the end of the day, it's still an outward expression of creativity. And I just find wrestling to be like the perfect potpourri of all the artistic forms of expression, and also to the incorporation of athleticism into it too.
Were you born of athletes? Is your family?
No.
So you were that anomaly. No. You're a rare athlete.
I'm a rare athlete for both sides of my family. No one really would consider themselves athletic. I don't even consider myself athletic. I'm just good at running into things.
You are the Brute Squad.
Pretty much, you know.
I just snorted. It was really funny.
Well, you're not going to find me playing basketball. You're not going to find me playing baseball. You're not going to find me playing volleyball. Lacrosse, I don't know how I got good at that.
How about badminton? Probably not.
I'll probably hurt myself in the process. Probably more likelihood of me hurting myself playing badminton than being in a wrestling.
Right. So I give up on sports in 87 after the Mets won in 86, and I don't really care about sports anymore. Okay. I understand that I don't, like, follow anything, but I know who Drew Brees is or, you know, I just know things. Is he still playing? I have no idea. It doesn't matter.
No, he just retired.
Yeah, I just know names, right? I know,
no.
Like, there's two there's brothers, Eli and Mannings, right? That's enough to know. I can watch a game, and that's fine. But you really – were you born? You weren't born 300 pounds and, you know, 8 feet tall. But how did you get to that point in your life and said, I'm going to start running into people now?
You know, it's very funny. So growing up, I did a lot of things that people that know me now would look at me and go, wait, you did that? And, you know, like I said, again, art. Always have been into art and some form of expression of it. So when I was younger, I was a child actor. You know, I did the whole thing. My mother running me all around the city to all the different
auditions. Tell me some commercials you did as a kid.
Okay. Pizza Hut.
I did one.
Okay.
Yeah, so go ahead.
Pizza Hut, Sears, and Toys R Us were the commercials. And I did countless print ads. But
like Sears catalog stuff?
Sears catalogs, Macy's, something for Annie when that show came back on Broadway in maybe the late 80s. Yeah. Had a few movie tryouts for Dennis the Menace and things like that.
Sorry, I had to lurch into it. You got to
do it. It's okay, you know.
I did a Campbell Soup commercial. Never aired, but I did a Campbell Soup commercial.
Well, my father gave my mother 1 year. She said, you have 1 year to get him off the ground with this, and then he's got to be poured into school. And,
right.
You know, and I think it was more so her tiring, and I don't blame her because back then with no cell phones, you'd get a phone call out of nowhere on your house phone, if anyone even knows what a house phone is anymore.
Right, the corded rotary yellow
style exactly,
thing.
Exactly, yeah.
And there's only one in the house, so the cord's 1,000 feet long.
Yep, yeah. And then it's just having to run into Manhattan in the mid-80s, pushing the stroller around with me and it rushing to get there just in time. So I think she had her fill with that, and that was the end of that. But from there, you know, I went on and did the church choir. I did some musicals.
Your baritone or an alto?
I was soprano, believe it or
not. No.
Yes, yes. I was very
high. Not a castrato?
Oh, I might as well have been.
You're a soprano? My God. Another fucking box to check. All right, keep going.
Well, I eventually became a bass, but, right. You know, soprano. And like I said, I did a lot of musicals and then a lot of other acting, just straightforward, you know, school plays and stuff like that.
Favorite musical?
Favorite musical. I'm going to have to go with Hairspray.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah, that's a big one in our house.
Any reason why?
You know, I think it does a great job of highlighting the ignorance from that time period and really, you know, honing in on the diversity in it and the acceptance that we're still unfortunately striving for today. So
I played Charlie Brown in 3 separate stagings of Ira Goodman Charlie Brown across 4 years.
Wow. Wow. How many did you get a lot of awards for that?
In third grade, we had cupcakes afterwards.
Okay, that counts.
Yeah.
Okay, so award-winning actor then.
I'm an award-winning actor.
Then you have a box to check off.
You have a SAG card?
No.
That's long gone or you never got one?
I never got one. I do have my IMDb credit as a producer and as an actor.
Well, then you're real.
I guess. But
you
no.
didn't need the strike, though.
Yeah, I need the SAG card.
Yeah, as of this recording, the strike is over.
Yeah, exactly.
The writer's strike is over.
Well, you know, I don't know. Do I have to make up for lost time? I could go outside and just walk back and forth with a sign. Maybe,
right.
Maybe that would help, you know.
Sandwich board.
Yes. Anything that we could put on it, maybe, perhaps. Yeah.
All right. So let's talk 80s wrestling, because that was the hook of the world back then. No one even knew. I mean, fine. Bruno Sammartino. Like, who's this guy? Right. And then all of a sudden, Hulk Hogan shows up.
Yep.
And like everyone, at least everyone probably my age, like between like maybe 45 and 55 at this point now, lost their goddamn shit. Mm-hmm. And WrestleMania 1 was so sold out. It was the first like, what do they call it? Like pay-per-view or simulcast? We had to go to my high school to watch it on a screen in the auditorium. There was no way to watch it otherwise.
Fun factoid. Everyone always thinks that's the first pay-per-view. That was not the first pay-per-view. The first pay-per-view as we know it, kids nowadays don't know the joy of a cable box and all that stuff, but that was actually a closed circuit event.
Closed circuit. Sorry, you're right. Wrong language.
The first wrestling pay-per-view produced by World Wrestling Entertainment, as they're known as now, was the Wrestling Classic in 1986.
Oh, that was like way after WrestleMania 1.
Yes, everything was closed circuit prior to.
So did you have favorites back then? I have my favorites.
Well, you mentioned my favorite, you know.
Hogan?
Hogan. I'm a Hogan guy.
I was a Junkyard Dog guy.
Okay. I was Hogan, and then I became a huge Ultimate Warrior guy.
That was probably after I started not really liking it anymore. I moved on to like Transformers and G.I. Joe.
I've always stuck with Ghostbusters and wrestling. Those were the two.
Those are good choices.
Oh, yeah. Those solid. Solid.
Did you have like the rubberized, like third to scale dolls? They weren't really dolls.
I had
Stretch Armstrong, but like Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
The LGN ones. You could actually use those as an object to possibly club someone over the head with. Not that I've ever done
those
anything
are blunt
like that.
Objects.
Yes, exactly. But no, I had a few of those as hand-me-downs from my older cousin. We had Hasbros. That's what they had when they first started making those in the early 90s. And I still got my Roddy Piper one on my desk downstairs, my office.
Roddy Piper, who like redefined wrestling stardom by being in the John Carpenter's They Live movie.
We just recently watched that for the first time. Not myself, but I shared that with my wife for the first time in my house.
One of the best street fight scenes in movie history. Them kicking the shit out of each other for like 30 minutes in the alley.
Then he forces the glasses on him.
Yes. If you haven't watched They Live... You got to watch They Live. If you don't know what it is, you will find out. It's called They Live. That's it. John Carpenter, you're done.
Straight to the point.
Done.
Yeah.
You can't. You just can't do it. Like there's Halloween and then there's They Live.
Well, you know.
It's like in between the thing, right?
Well, now I have to say, and I will say my one swear word. You know, the line from the movie that everyone always knows is, I'm here to kick ass and chew bubble gum. and I'm all out of bubble gum.
Yep.
So now everyone knows where that's from. They live. You have an assignment. Do it.
So I'm blanking on this. It was Rowdy Roddy Piper and Paul Orndorff versus Hogan and who for the first one?
Mr. T.
It was Mr. T.
Yes, and they had –
Didn't they meet it during Rocky or something?
They met during Rocky III.
Right.
And it was my understanding, especially being that we mentioned Roddy Piper, one of the greatest of all time. He's on his own Mount Rushmore of wrestling.
But oh, sure.
Apparently Mr. T was very difficult to work with. And
I can see that.
He wasn't very respectful of, as wrestlers call the business. And I think Roddy Piper had to kind of let him know, if you're not willing to play ball, I'm going to make you play ball.
Mm.
And that's kind of the urban legend that goes around the campfire, and I've seen it on a few documentaries. So, yeah, you had Mr. Wonderful, and you had Roddy Piper on one side with...
Well, Randy Savage showed up and like, holy shit, who's this guy?
Exactly. Well, that guy never wore the same outfit on television.
Really?
More than once.
Yeah. That was like the Liberace of wrestlers.
Yep.
He was amazing.
He was great. Another one before his time. You know, there's certain wrestlers that get credit for, an overall package and the pomp performance. And then there's there's a separate Mount Rushmore of wrestling where you have guys like Roddy Piper and even Macho Man, where it's like, these are all-time greats, but they're great for actually the wrestling itself, and the attention to detail. Macho Man was one of the first guys that actually went ahead and would plot out his matches, again, predetermined. Sorry.
But everything is choreography. It's really hard to remember, too.
Yeah, it is. A lot of times when you're in the ring there, you kind of have a roundabout idea of what's going to happen, but things change on the fly. And while a lot of people may think we're just talking nonsense to one another, we're actually giving each other instructions.
And then there's also like someone like George the Animal Steel was like a professor at Harvard or something too.
Yes, he was a college professor. I know for sure that he was a high school gym teacher and football coach.
Right. All the alter egos. Yeah. Extraordinary. But these are the folks that paved the way for, Dave Bautista and The Rock and John Cena, right?
No, it's incredible now where Hogan was one of the first ones to do it, make the transition to Hollywood. But I think we saw, unfortunately, no one's going ahead and speaking about the critically acclaimed film Mr. Nanny anytime soon.
Oh, yeah. That's a rewatchable for sure.
Or Suburban Commando.
Yeah.
No one's bringing those up. But now,
since
you had those guys who paved the trail, even Roddy Piper, they live.
Yeah.
Now there's more opportunities for once these guys are done with their wrestling career, they can move on to something a little bit more stable, but again, still on that art wheelhouse.
Yeah.
From what I understand, studios love wrestlers because of the fact that they don't have to hire a stuntman.
That's true. Added bonus.
Exactly.
Well, it's all theater. Everything comes down to theater.
Exactly. It's all it is.
People want to be entertained. Oh, you're not entertained.
It's going ahead and suspending, disbelief. And gosh, with everything going on in the world right now, people could find solace in things like wrestling.
Yeah.
So
let's spend the last 5 minutes talking about, you never thought you'd be a nonprofit fundraiser. It's like not in your box to check until you had to, learn what it was like to have a need to help people that, should go through something less terribly than you went through. Until you had to go through something pretty terrible. You're raising money for St. Jude. By the way, my oncologist is at St. Jude. Tom Merchant is the head of oncology at St. Jude. So I don't like their ads, but I like what they do. It's really important.
I have been so fortunate. So it comes in two different forms. So one way that I work with a few of these nonprofits is through raising money through my wrestling. And I've actually just partnered with three very well-known organizations, The V Foundation.
You know them well.
Which is run by ESPN. And they also happen to run Connor's Cure, which is WWE's cancer research charity. So now they're all underneath one roof. And I've also recently come to terms to help with some marketing stuff for Sloan Kettering, which was where I was treated.
Me too.
And
we are the same person.
Pretty much. Yeah. Pretty much. We're both handsome guys with very long heads of hair, nice beards.
Flowing, you know, flowing Yanni kind of hair.
It's getting in each other's faces right now.
Yeah,
it's kind of difficult. Yeah, please.
We have to get a foot back, please.
Okay, thank you. I'm just going to push my chair back. And I'm also getting a chance to work with Melanoma Research Alliance, and that's something, you know, that's something I'm very happy about, but they're also very happy about it as well, as being that I survived lepto and no one else has done that. So now, you know, everything I do, especially the wrestling, while it is a little bit of a self-serve, it is great that it gives me a platform to put myself out there and people to look and go, hey, if this knucklehead can still chase his dreams, get married, have a kid, you know, function as a high-level corporate executive, then maybe there's a chance for me. And that's all I really wanted to do, was just show people, like, if I can do it, you got this. But back to your question, the other way that I get to work with nonprofits is when my wife said, hey, Dad, you know, we're expecting here.
Right.
I said to myself, okay, well, I need a little bit more security than owning my own businesses. My wife was a New York City school teacher, and we both agreed that we wanted her to raise not only her daughter, my stepdaughter, but raise our own daughter.
Oh, it's easy. Piece of cake. Part-time job.
Well, and
isn't it? I have two. It was a no-brainer to raise two kids.
Well, I just said, you know what? It's your turn to stay home. So that's when I figured, you know what? Time for me to go out to pound the pavement a little bit and figure out, where can Sean fit into this work world now that I've put the cancer behind me and everything else? And I wound up getting a wonderful job at a company called Gig USA, and they really believed in me and gave me a shot. And I'm their business development manager. And it's kind of basically like, hey, pick the organizations you want to work with, which is great because I get to really go out of my way for an organization like College for Cancer for College.
Isn't that like Will Ferrell's group?
Yes.
Yeah.
I went down to their gala the other evening on Saturday night. And, you know, I've sat here and shared my story, and you've shared your story with your listeners. But I'll tell you, I'm pretty sure we have kind of the same mindset where we look at the cancer. And I always say this, that cancer was the most beautiful thing to ever happen to me. And people look at me like I have nine heads.
Yeah.
But like I said, hashtag meathead frat boy, I was living a life, but it wasn't a fulfilling life.
Right.
Cancer being that beautiful thing, as I call it, gave me perspective to appreciate. And I've done more living in the past 7 years of my life than I've done the previous 31. And in talking to some of these kids that are just either going into college or getting out of college, but they've gone ahead and they got sick when they were like 8 years old. And
yeah,
they have the same mindset that we have. And it's just like, holy goodness. Like,
well, we've been given gifts.
Yeah.
And we can try to answer the question, how the fuck are we still here? Which is another podcast.
Yeah.
Do this. I love that you list on your LinkedIn profile, by all accounts, I'm not supposed to be here, but I'd rather say that you're past your expiration date.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm the zombie.
Yes. So again, like Sean walked, well, I've never been a wrestler. I played football once and broke my hand, so I'm playing that again. I'm not a sports person. I've never owned a coffee empire. But I did have a golf-sized tumor in my cerebellum as a young adult with rare cancer, and we do a lot of stuff in nonprofit consulting as well, and I'm a wrestling nut on the not-wrestler side. But I want to find on eBay the original WWF cassette tape from 1980-something-something. But I'm thrilled to physically see you here in person. Not the last time, my friend. So thank you for sharing everything with us and giving us a bit of a retro throwback to the 80s and 90s.
And if I could just give one shout-out, so to speak. Okay. My mic's been cut. Just want to thank everyone at the New York Wrestling Connection. I'll be working with them on October 28th for a nice-sized event. Actually, it'll be the largest independent wrestling event in Long Island history, and they've chosen to have me on the card. And again, I'm looking forward to it, just to be able to use it as a platform to raise awareness for the beauty of cancer research.
Well, this may air after that, so good luck.
Thank you so much.
Be well, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you.
Out of Patience with Matthew Zachary is an Off-Script Health production. The executive producers are Matthew Zachary and Andrew McDowell. It's mixed and edited by Kyle Moore. If you like the show, ratings and reviews are always welcome. Leave us a message anytime at 855-AUDIO-66. That's 855-AUDIO-66 to share your healthcare shitness with us, and we might just play them on the air on a future episode. For more information about this show and Off-Script Health, visit offscript.com. That's offscript, no T, .com.